You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
tell people
who you're gonna turn to next.
Tell me, people, you gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah, get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna be?
Tell me why your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, knowing you and how dedicated you are, you got it done anyways, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we appreciate you. So continue to do that. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, and all times are going to give our Eastern times. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. Time for an Awakening on Fridays at 8 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening from 7 at 7 p.m. on Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Please go on WeBuyBlack.com. And also, too, once again, I'm referring to the donations needed for the creation of a American African supermarket here in the Atlanta area with American African business owners and products to be sold at the supermarket. The black farmers, the American African farmers and their produce. I mean, let's make it happen, y'all. You know, it's a damn shame with all these over a million some of us here, we ain't got a supermarket. It's an indictment. Oh, man. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Taimba has been taking our people to the continent for many years. Once again, he just got back from Ghana back in on the 5th of January. If you want to see photos of previous tours, if you want to see photos, you can go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, now you can go to YouTube. Go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Brother's in town, and he has a trip upcoming in April, going to Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through the 12th. And then back to Ghana again, the
May 24th to June 4th, and then going to Tanzania, November 18th through the 29th. I want to go on that trip to Tanzania. And so give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans.org. My guest this Friday will be Baba Rinoko Rashidi. Rinoko, on his website, he did have a trip planned. I guess that's been postponed because of COVID. I know that Brother Bomani, he went on a trip to Ghana. And previous to that, he had another trip that he went on to. In those places, he went to Tanzania. And everything was cool. So, but like I said, in Africa, which is deep about the virus, is not as ravaging as it is in other places in the world, particularly in European or where Caucasians are. Because on the continent, the worst place is South Africa and Namibia and the other place up in the northern part of Africa, in Egypt, you know. So anyway, so Baba Rinoko will be my guest on this Friday. He has a lot of things happening. In fact, he has a conversation, a one-on-one with my good sister, Dr. Bayina Bello from Haiti. And so that's going to be in February, I think. I'll get the date on in February. And that's going to be a nice thing with Baba Rinoko. And he's also doing some other pieces, Zoom pieces. So, Dr. Rinoko, Habashah Incorporated.org. These brothers and sisters are doing the work. Habashah Incorporated.org. Go online. Check them out. They are doing the work. They're in Africa. They're in Ghana. They're doing the work here in the Atlanta area. Habashah stands for helping Africans. Helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habashah. The Habashah Works Program, the Sustainable Seeds, the Golden Growers, all kinds of good stuff. It is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Check out HabashahIncorporated.org. Mama Nia is pretty much getting it set up in the Greenbrier Mall, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. She's getting it set up. It's a lot bigger than her previous place in the Greenbrier Mall. And so it's going to be great when they open. And when this virus subsides and we can once again congregate in public places, because that was one of the things that we had planned, myself and Bayina Bello, because of her book that she has out in this, The Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution, The Sisters of the Haitian Revolution, you know. And I was going to do a thing on our history. So, but yeah, give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. That's BBA Toomey buzzing in. And I'll be trying to work that out this week with BBA Toomey, what they do. Okay. Odata's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph Dibbitt Abernathy. Across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. I believe the Shrine will still be open for another week or two on Friday and Saturday here. So you can get your furniture and shoes and books and everything else from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Also, another bookstore that we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Brother Gazimde Ajamu. He has a nice coffee bar now. It's a beautiful place. So give brother a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. The Ledge Group. The Ledge stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Ledge Group. Go online to theledgegroup.com and check out what they're doing in the major areas of sustainability of food, water, clothing, and shelter on the continent. They have 12 projects going in over 6 countries and over 170 employees with 160 members. That's the Ledge Group. The brothers and sisters are doing the work. Check them out. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us. Every Thursday night, the Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. And the name of the program is Dare to Win. And that's the every Thursday night at 9 p.m. And you can call to listen or to give questions, comments, or concerns by dialing 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sanjay Dash Aiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia has been doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti in the rural area. Definitely needs the support because, of course, you know, when you don't have a safety net in a place, it's going to be more difficult to get the resources out to the rural areas. So they're depending on people outside of them, and they're depending on us. So Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I dot org. Sanjay dash Haiti. Go online and check out what they're doing. Look at those beautiful children in the areas of education, healthcare, sustainable agriculture, and, of course, entrepreneurship. So, Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti, educating our young warriors. They need support as well. Make your check of money order out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. That's Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. But if you want to use PayPal or Cash App, on the Cash App, the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and you can make a consistent donation to the Akaban Institute to further the education of our young warriors. Also, too, they have a sister circle, Mama Yah and Baba Baruti, on the 6th. Of February, on the 6th of February, that's Saturday the 6th, from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, in the early evening, Mama Ya has her workshop for Sisters Only, When a Woman Heals, for Sisters Only, and it's a part of the quarterly Sister Circle, and you make your donation, which is $10 for adults and $5 for teens, and of course, you can send it to that Cash App, dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And, of course, put the pertinent information, which is Quarterly Sister Circle, and then your name, and then the email address that you want the streaming link sent to, okay? And then Baba Baruti, he has Rights Fundamental, a developing an effective rites of passage program. And that is the same day, Saturday, February 6th. His is from noon to 3, from noon to 3. And it's $20 for the brothers, for warriors in training, and 10 for the young folks. And the same thing applies. Put the pertinent information, the quarterly men's gathering, your name, and an email address where you want to send the streaming link to. So that's happening on this 6th. The volume 2 of the Enye Sesim, oh, I haven't read it yet. Well, of course, I'll read it once I'm done with this, is out. And you can get that at AkabanHouse.com. AkabanHouse.com, where you can pick up all of Baba Baruti's books. He's prolific, outstanding work. Check it out. Then the 13th Annual Youth Health Science Fair Exchange. Science for Survival, the Age of Surveillance. The cameras are always on. Check it out. That's going to be Friday the 5th. Usually they have a two-day, one day at the Greenbrier. Well, actually Friday, it would be at the West End Mall over on Ralph David Abernathy. And then on Saturday, it would be at the Greenbrier Mall. But because of the situation, it's going to be streamed. So it'll be Friday, February 5th, from 1 to 3. From 1 to 3. And it's going to be on Zoom. So if you have Zoom, but if you want more information, dial 404-344-2777. That's 404-344-2777. And but I'm going to give you the Zoom. And the number for the Zoom is 807-211-2759. I repeat, 807-211-2759. And the passcode is Pearl, P-E-A-R-L, P-E-A-R-L. And so just jot that down. You got the Zoom. Put that information in on that day, and then you'll be able to participate and see what these young people, it's just beautiful, the work that they do and the efforts they put into it, the displays and so forth, just fantastic. So check that out. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inyesesim. Another person I know, Brother Kalanji, last week before it was a brother, Taki Ratan, who was an ancestor, Brother Kalanji. January 17th, in this so-called modern world of advanced technology, people are allowed to do what they feel, say what they feel, hide behind a screen name, and violate any codes that they feel without even the slightest thought of any type of repercussions or consequences. Why? Because there are absolutely no rules and there is no accountability. You don't have to be whom you say you are to be respected as such. All you have to do is look good on the internet and dress the part. Anyone can speak on whatever they would like, even if they have no knowledge of the subject. Just look the part and act like you might know something. Brother Kalanji Jama Chenga. Just because someone is not paid by the state or employed in an agency dedicated to our genocide does not mean that he or she is not an agent. Some of these agents receive no instruction or financial support from the Yorugu. Most have never been officially affiliated with any other offices or operations. In fact, some of Yorugu's best agents do not even know they are agents because of the atmosphere, this environment that we're in. They behave that way automatically. Affirm, I do not hide behind a screen. Affirm, I do not hide behind a screen. January 18th, virtually all American African political, research, and civil rights organizations that operate in the United States are dependent upon grants from Europeans, from Caucasians, individuals, and institutions. Thus, American African organizations are not owned by those who message the organizations are perceived to convey. Randall Robinson. Randall Robinson, Trans-Africa, yeah. So many of the American African grassroots organizations would come to prominence in the 1960s have become disappointments as well. In hindsight, they have always been the handmaidens of European culture, seeking only to color Yorugu's world. Their politics have never been truly revolutionary. They have never sought African sovereignty. For the most part, the leadership only sought validation, threatening anarchy to gain leverage in the contest for inclusion, belligerently castigating any below their rank who would dare question their sub-assimilationist motives. If nothing else, this revolutionary contradiction is evident in the lingering cries to create an independent society wherein Yorugu stolen land, that every Negro must be included in our revolution, and that the admittance of alliances with liberal Caucasians, Yorugus, who have always funded and bedded them anyway. This is not to say that they accomplished nothing of benefit for African people, but their current promotion of our homosexualization and gender confusion, efforts to undermine culture first by strengthening their ties with Caucasian benefactors and defining the authenticity of past and present leaders who are sleeping with the enemy, call this into question. Be careful who you look to for educated leadership. I repeat, be careful who you look to for educated leadership. Affirm, I only support and work within the organizations which respect our traditions and seek to independently empower African people. Affirm, I only support and work within organizations with respect of our traditions and seek to independently empower African people. Brothers and sisters, the Imye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. It's King Day. That's what it is. It's King Day. That's right. Let me read this little piece here. As I often read things that I feel that I just, you know, although I read them a lot, I'm speaking to positive reinforcements, I guess, you know. That's being redundant, and that's being repetitive, and that's being, you know, well, I'm just trying to make sure you get it. I heard Renoco made this reference. I think it's Dr. Thurman whose quote it is in the Hidden Colors. I think Renoco was in the second or third one, you know. And he says, what you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. And who's doing the telling? That's why it's vitally important that we do the telling about who we are from our culture and our history. Because if you allow this society or what we've been told, that's why many of us think we ain't about nothing. Because we've been led to believe that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. What you've been told. I reject any and everything that's coming from Caucasians, from Urugu, from Europeans, from white folks, crackers, whatever. Reject it. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern. And your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with your philosophy, what you think. And it ends with what you do. So if your philosophy is that brothers, American African men ain't about nothing. They're cheats. They're lazy. Then how will you treat them? How will your actions be? But if your thought pattern is that brothers need to be supported, they need to be encouraged, they need to be lifted, then you would treat them that way. If your thought pattern that our sisters ain't nothing but bitches, hoes, and hoochies, then how you would treat them? Exactly. Like bitches, hoes, and hoochies. But if your thought pattern is that our sisters need to be protected, respected, loved, cared, then you would treat them with protection and respect. It begins what you think and it ends with what you do. That's why it's vitally important that what comes into us, we have to make sure that it is right for us collectively, not right for me personally. No, what's right for us collectively? Because we live in a society that perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. So, we must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so we lay at your feet, the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's troll and square, Africa's books of wisdom. Go now and build for eternity. Brother Lester Velt Middleton. Once again, you can see Brother Lester Velt Middleton and hear him on YouTube. Put his information in. He has interviewed some of our great warrior scholars, and they're just gems. So please do that. All right. Today, of course, is King Day. And, of course, many people are off of work. Many people are out of school. And, I think of all these days, to me, this day particularly, and I know that many of us worked to make this a reality, the King holiday, way back in the 80s, the late 70s and the 80s. In fact, it was during Reagan's administration, which came in the 80s, that the holiday was officially, done. And then some states said cool, other states no, but finally every state, it is recognized, and most people get a day off. Most people don't, this day, I think, is the most hypocritical. The hypocrisy is just sickening, because of who Dr. King was and what he was trying to do. Now, understand something, okay? As the program, which was his birthday this past Friday, is the 15th, and we had some good discussion and played a few things, but he was coming into a new reality and a new awareness, because he was trying hard to get these Caucasians to understand all the things that they say. See, that's the thing. The hypocrisy is just too deep that they say it about, but yet they only give lip service to. And so, as I said, he said to Harry Belafonte, I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. And now, today, when you look at the divisions within the society, and it's always been there, they've been exacerbated, particularly because of Trump. I'm gonna play a piece on Wednesday. I think that you might like. It's a Caucasian, but it's you might like this particular piece. I've been sending it out to a number of people, but I'm gonna play my sister, the great griot, Kara Poole. She is a beautiful sister, and she has many things. She, I believe she's in North Carolina, and the great griot, and I'm quite sure you've probably seen her on YouTube. If you haven't, please put in the great griot. She has a lot of good information, research. In fact, that's when you look her up on the great griot, talks about her thirst for knowledge and history. She was an actress and did a number of things like that. So she melted them into it in production. And she just has some good pieces. Really, I've been playing them on the program for a number of years. And it seems like she's made some new ones, some of that I haven't seen, But I'm going to play this one piece by Dr. King. It's about, I think, 15 minutes long, 14 minutes long. And we'll have some dialogue on this. This is Dr. King Day. It's Dr. King Day. And if you want to get in this dialogue, dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. This is her piece on Dr. King. And it's a deep piece. It is not, it tells of the the cover-up of the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King.
This is February, and I'd like to welcome you to Black History Month, better known to mainstream as Dr. Martin Luther King Month. Everything Dr. Martin Luther King. School curriculums, Dr. King. News reports, TV shows, Dr. King. Luncheons, dinners, events, Dr. King. So let's not change tradition now. Let's learn about Dr. King. The parts of Dr. King's life, and especially his death, that they'll never teach you.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reportedly chased and fired on a radio-equipped car containing two white men. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face.
In 1999, new evidence surfaced painting a totally different picture than the one we were initially sold pertaining to the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. The old image was of a white racist man by the name of James Earl Ray, who took a rifle and from the bathroom window of a rooming house across the street from the Lorraine Hotel on a solo mission, fired a shot on April 4th, 1968, killing Dr. King.
The police here in Memphis immediately issued a bulletin for a young white man dressed in dark clothes who dashed out of that building across the street. He dropped a Browning automatic rifle, which was fitted with a scope on the sidewalk, and then he fled.
With mounds of evidence and testimonies, William Peppers, an attorney, will represent the King family in the 1999 wrongful death civil action suit of King versus Lord Jowers and co-conspirators, which exposed that James Earl Ray was not the culprit. And it definitely was not a solo mission. Lloyd Jowers, the owner of Jim's Bar and Grill, located across from the Lorraine Hotel, stepped forward, telling his story to Sam Donaldson on ABC Primetime. According to the transcript of that interview, a mafia-connected produce dealer named Frank Liberto approached him to assist in the murder plot of King. Liberto had a carrier deliver $100,000 to Jowers' restaurant with instructions to hold the money. And on the day of the murder, a man by the name Raul, the same man that helped frame James Earl Ray, showed up with a rifle in a box. The case would show that these front men were only an accomplice to a larger conspiracy, one involving the U.S. government.
There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the fifth victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality.
We've had in our area here outside agitation groups of all levels. We've had Martin Luther King.
This city, the police commissioner of this city, and everybody in the white power structure of this city must take a responsibility for everything that Jim Clark does in this city.
As early as the 1950s, Dr. King's activities and organizations was targeted by COINTELPRO. His every move was under constant federal surveillance to neutralize King as an effective leader. And of course, to get even closer to King, they paid and supplied informants to infiltrate King's camp. Jowers claimed the meetings to assassinate King took place at Jim's Grill, which included undercover Memphis police Merrill McCulloch, Memphis police Lieutenant Earl Clark, a third police officer, and two men Jowers thought to be federal agents. Leading up to the plot to completely silence King, the goal was to make him totally vulnerable on his return trip to Memphis by removing any security detail who could be a witness and sympathetic to him. April 3rd, two black firefighters, Floyd Newson and Norval Wallace, who were working at fire station number 2 across the street from the Lorraine Motel, were each transferred to different fire stations. Newson, an activist himself, was at the last speech that King would give before receiving the call to change his location. Jerry Williams, a black detective for Memphis Police, typically tasked with securing an all-black security team to accompany King when in Memphis, this time wasn't assigned to form that team. The TAC-10 police escort team, who normally provide Memphis police cars that accompany King, was pulled back. Ed Reddit, a black police officer, was removed from his surveillance post and sent home against his will 1 hour prior to King's assassination. The Invaders, a group similar to the Black Panthers, who were also staying at the Lorraine Hotel, was helping King to organize. They were ordered to leave around 5:30 p.m. after someone telling the Lorraine staff that the SCLC would not pay for their rooms for the night. Reluctantly, they departed around 5:50 p.m. With all possible obstacles out of the way, Dr. Martin Luther King now stood alone, prepped for the assassination. On April 4th, by 6:01 p.m., military intelligence set up photographers on the roof of the fire station with clear view to Dr. King's balcony. And the 20th Special Forces Group, the Green Beret, had an 8-man sniper team at the assassination location. Lloyd Jowers stated after the shot was fired, he received a smoking rifle at the rear of the door from Lieutenant Earl Clark. He broke it down, wrapped it up, and was disposed of by taxicab driver James McGraw, a longtime friend. And to complete the plot, it was imperative for the U.S. government to cover up their involvement. And they did. Several witnesses identified activity coming from the bushes behind Jim's grill. And not one was questioned. Although one cab driver, Buddy Butler's, did get an opportunity to report what he saw. Buddy Butler was loading a customer's luggage in his car when the shot rang and reported that he saw a man running from the scene right after the shot, going south on Mulberry Street and jumping into a police car. Butler immediately called dispatch and reported it. Butler was interviewed at the Yellow Cab Company later that evening by police. Louis Ward would later find out that Buddy Butler's body was thrown out of a speeding car on Route 55 in Memphis. And 7 a.m., April 5th, the next morning, Maynard Stiles, a senior official at the Memphis Sanitation Department, received a call from Memphis Police Department Inspector Sam Evans, requesting to clear the bushes and debris from the lot adjacent the hotel. The crime scene was sanitized, wiped clean. So the alibi of James Earl Ray shooting Dr. King from a bathroom window would appear more believable. After 70 testimonies and mounds of evidence, 12 jurors, 6 white, 6 black, deliberated for 1 hour before revealing the verdict. King versus Lloyd Jowers and co-conspirators, including J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, Richard Helms and the CIA, the U.S. military, the local Memphis police, and organized crime figures from New Orleans and Memphis. And in what should have been the court case of the century, was silent. Only one local newsman covered the trial. According to the trial, the same government that honors King was found guilty in conspiring to kill him. But what we must understand is why. The persona that they create of King.
I have a dream. I have a dream. I have a dream. I still have a dream.
Is not the man that they silenced. the man that pushed farther than civil rights. Years after his dream, Dr. King began to focus on three issues: racism, war, poverty.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. The other thing I want you to understand is this: that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
His second issue, war.
Nothing more clearly demonstrates our nation's abuse of military power than our tragic adventure in Vietnam.
Dr. King, when you speak out against this war, do you speak as a Negro opponent of the war? Is there something especially anti-Negro or racist about the war that impels you to speak out?
I cannot overlook the fact that I am a Negro, and that this war is doing a great deal to destroy the lives of thousands and thousands of my brothers and sisters. We are dying physically in disproportionate numbers in Vietnam, some 22 and 4/10% of the deaths, even though we are only about 11% of the population.
It has frustrated our development of home at home, telling our own underprivileged citizens that we place insatiable military demands above their most critical needs. It has greatly contributed to the forces of reaction in America and strengthened the military-industrial complex. And it has practically destroyed Vietnam. Many of our senators and congressmen vote joyously to appropriate billions of dollars for the war in Vietnam, and many of these same senators and congressmen vote loudly against a fair housing bill to make it possible for a Negro veteran of Vietnam to purchase a decent home. We arm Negro soldiers to kill on foreign battlefields, but offer little protection for their relatives from beatings and killings in our own South. We are willing to make the Negro 100% of a citizen in warfare, but reduce him to 50% of a citizen on American soil.
And last, with the Poor People's Campaign, was his stance on poverty.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime
for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
And in the spring of 1968, Dr. King had plans to bring attention to these issues by bringing hundreds of thousands of poor people to an encampment in Washington, D.C., which caused a panic to the U.S. government. Their plan was to camp out until America pulled out of the Vietnam War and to reinvest that never-ending flow of money made available for war to dominate another country back into its citizens to help fight poverty in this nation. And although King preached a nonviolent message, they were terrified that demonstrators' anger level would increase, and they feared that a more radical group would take over and spark a revolution that they didn't have the troops to put down. The truth is, that was a reason for Dr. King's assassination, and it wasn't his stance on nonviolence and social integration. It is time for us to weed through the intentional deceptions about Dr. King and study him for ourselves, because what he died fighting is not only facing us today, but it has magnified. So I ask you, will you celebrate his legacy with this symbolic ceremony, or will you have the audacity to continue his fight? Our fight, which is even more necessary today. The first person to...
Sister Kara Poole, the Black Griot. Go online, go on YouTube, and put that information into Black Griot. I mean, it's outstanding work. You can see that that was good investigation, good information on the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and what really happened. Of course, there was another, many trials. The King family challenged the government's position on James Earl Ray. And in fact, I think Dexter King met with James Earl Ray. Also too, you can, Judge Joe Brown, look up Judge Joe Brown. He has some information on the assassination of Dr. King and how this was a government cover-up. And that's what I'm saying. This is a day full of hypocrisy when the government talks about giving a King Day a holiday, when they were the ones that provided the information and the atmosphere to have him assassinated, to have him killed, you know. And but also, too, like I said, I believe that he was evolving like most leaders evolve. And I think that, you know, he would have been a very strong Pan-Africanist. But, Brother Oshie, no, you know, I'm saying it to say that once you keep battling something and you see that what you're battling after so many innumerable times that you challenge it and you bump your head on it, that it's not changing. And what caused then you to change. Not to change, to try to change that, because you can see after you've charged at it so many times, it's impenetrable. So you say, bump that. In fact, what would be best for my people? See, being a Christian, or sometimes even being a religious person, and you want to believe in the brotherhood of man. You know, you want to believe in the human family. But there's an entity on the human family, the European, whose mindset is not about brotherhood and coming together and sharing and love and so forth. No, his human development was not that. His human development was selfish, greedy, fearful. That's just like Dr. Sheikh Anshin Jop, who we owe a great debt of gratitude for arguing at the Kemetic or Egyptian symposium back in 1974. He said, I can prove to you that the ancient Egyptian people were African, were black. And he did it. He did it in such a persuasive way that the United Nations, UNESCO, wrote the history of Africa in two volumes. We wrote it. He can prove it. And the smoking gun, the melanin dosage test, which he had developed in Senegal. He could extract melanin from the mummies and determine how much melanin they had in them. Not only did he just not that, that was a smoking gun, but he said other ways, there's phenotypes, skeletal, all kinds of ways. History, all of that. But anyway, he said that there was two cradles of human development, a northern cradle and a southern cradle. Of course, we as Africans are the southern cradle, and Europeans are the northern cradle. And part of the northern cradle is because of the harshness of that environment that they had to deal with, caused them to behave and act the way that they do to this present day. That's the problem. We're going to take a break. We come back from the break, there'll be more discussion. And of course, this is King Day. And so I hope you will join the conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Radio Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday, 11 a.m., excuse me, on Monday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. this evening, it's Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. Followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then that is followed by, from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, at 8 p.m. to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Then on Thursdays at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Bonisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, it's the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 on Sunday. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. On this Dr. King Day, many people, you know, you will hear speeches. There's contests. There's poetry contests, reading contests. Art, all kinds of things. I know that's what we had back in Milwaukee on this day. And people had a chance to win some scholarships. And, of course, there was a breakfast. And a lot of those aren't happening because of COVID, of course. You know, a lot of the King gatherings are not happening because of COVID. And, you know, it's unfortunate. But there are some programs on Zoom, you know, and you can take advantage of those. But the reality, once again, is that, you know, I'm talking about the hypocrisy of this day by this system. We already heard from our good sister, the great Creole, Kara Poole. And once again, please go to YouTube and put in the great Creole for a lot of the year. It seems she has some new ones because I always thought I had them all, and I've played a few here on the program over the years, but seems like she has some really good ones, some new ones, good information, well researched in how she presents it. But anyway, I think that we really have to look at Dr. King's birthday and call out the hypocrisy of this country and also within us. Actually, you know, honestly, I don't like to call out hypocrisy. I mean, to challenge this country for anything, to be honest. It's a waste of time. They are who they are, and they do what they do. What you seen happen last week, Wednesday, or it wasn't last week, Wednesday before that, the 6th, January 6th. January 6th will now be like 9/11 and April 7th, December 7th, 1941. You know, they'll chronicle this, that day as a day that is infamous in the United States because of what happened, you know. But to me, there is nothing we can do or say. The European suffers from cognitive dissonance. He believes that he is superior. There's nothing we can do or say to prove otherwise. And so we shouldn't even waste our time trying. You know, they have a vice grip on our minds, and that's what we're at war for, the minds of our people. Had Dr. King understood that more so as he was coming to the point of him being assassinated, I thought that he was moving in that direction, as many of the other leaders were starting to move in that direction, realizing that we continue to bump our heads. We continue to make a people accept us, to include us, to allow us to participate in a system that they have created for themselves and for their prosperity. And they didn't want us nowhere up in it. But what they did do is allowed some to get in, so giving you the impression or the illusion of inclusion, so to keep you still marching and hoping and praying that one day, yeah, you too will be a part of this madness. And now the madness is so deep. You know, when Dr. King was talking about, and when especially when he talked about the economic issue, he said there will have to be a serious economic infusion to make us equitable within a society. He said it didn't cost nothing to integrate a lunch counter. In fact, or stayed at a hotel. In fact, it was beneficial for the economy and beneficial for those people. So now that I ain't got to say no niggas allowed, I can let you come in and take your money. Let you give you a hamburger and take your money. Let you sit on the bus, take your money. So it didn't cost the government nothing. But what they're saying is that we need programs, we need institutions that need to be provided for us. That was going to cost millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. But then, of course, when Ronald Reagan came in, the whole economic situation changed. The disparity was, I mean, the gap was widened tremendously. What CEOs and top management made as opposed to the rank and file workers was tremendous. Tremendous. The gap economically, the income inequality is so wide and so huge, that chasm is so big that it would take over 230 years to close if Caucasians' economics were frozen to some degree and ours were increased at a percentage. That's how long, that's how wide it is. On average, Caucasians have $117,000 income. We have 17,000. They have 10% more, 10 times, rather, not 10%, 10 times as much. And so to me, it's not going to happen. You can join this conversation, brothers and sisters. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. If you're on already, just hit star twice. Hit star twice and you can get in on the conversation. There's some quotes. I did say some quotes the other day, last Friday, of Dr. King. You know, there's some beautiful quotes. Of course, he was eloquent in his presentation. You know, he really was. You know, he says, intelligence plus character is the goal of true education. Intelligence plus character. Because if we are not careful, our colleges will produce a group of closed-minded, unscientific, illogical propagandists consumed with immoral acts. Be careful, brother. Be careful, teachers. And he's right. And that's what they did. That's what you have. You have people with PhDs and so forth that are in service. That's why, to me, this situation with the pandemic needs to be very carefully looked at by us as well. And as you know, on this program, yes, we promoted not to take the vaccine, giving out information. I had a brother that I had that was received a tape from, presented some very good information. Some very good information. And as far as what was being stated, just not don't take it and don't do. No, take it and begin to boost your immune system. Take it and take vitamin D. Take it and eat properly. Take it and continue to wear a mask. Take it and continue to social distance. Take and protect yourself. Science investigates, religion interprets. Science gives man knowledge, which is power. Religion gives man wisdom, which is control. Science deals with mainly with facts. Religion deals mainly with values. The two are not rivals. Although science disproves because a religious narrative is a narrative of faith. A scientific narrative is a narrative based on facts, and sometimes they do collide, you know. But I understand where Dr. King was coming from. That was a tough mind and a tender heart sermon that he gave in 1959, August of 1959. The ultimate measure of the man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Strength of Love in 1963. And that's the deal. Where do we stand? Where do we stand as American African men and women? Where do we stand? The issue is here. Yes, Brother Sean, please.
Good afternoon. Hello, good morning, Brother Oshie. How are you?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm doing as well as I can be.
All right, I see you got it together because you couldn't get it together the last time.
I got my sentence straight. I got a couple things to say. For one, with Martin Luther King, how in today's time, especially if you see on the media, they reduce his name to his initials MLK. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just going off on a little analogy here. MLK, if you put an I in there, it spells milk. You know what I'm saying? And you know how Malcolm X said add a little bit of milk to coffee and dilute it and put you to sleep and still wakes you up. They are trying to turn Malcolm X into milk and pour it into black, society to put us to sleep. Because again, Martin Luther King was up.
Yeah.
He was up and he made his mistakes and he was trying to get right by people the best he knew how. You can't fault him hard, although integration's always going to be, I would rather have more black predominant areas and black, that's what I want. And I know that he was just trying to fight for just decency. And it was hard. It was a hard fight. I mean, him and the Panthers, everyone, we all know everyone was together. We just had our own
to get to that same particular goal of being recognized and being respected within the society and having the opportunity of doing whatever I wanted to do if I wanted to do it, or live wherever I wanted to live if I wanted to live there, or work where my talents could take me. I understand what you're saying. I like that analogy too, Brother Sean. That's cool.
I mean, that whole MLK. I mean, they say MLK, MLK. Yeah. That sounds like milk.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'd be thinking about, man.
Yeah, I hear you. That's good.
I looked up her, the Great Griot. I mean, she don't have too much stuff, but her, at least that presentation was on point. That was a lot of stuff that I hadn't heard of. I knew about the case about how, they pressed the government. They, made the government, guilty on it, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
On his death. And it's like, man, look, I mean, this it's difficult for I want to say for Black people to even to really bond past the point where, you know, it's like you say with the economics, like I don't think the goal would ever really be to like try to outdo mathematically, because we can't do that without Africa. I mean, we would have to truly like, I mean, Africa will really have to like, you know, really get the economics to where it, it itself is an economic engine. And then we, the Black people here who would naturally over time and connections and institutions would link into that financial system of Africa could even begin to start to have wealth in this country comparable to white folks in this country. Did you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Did you listen to the program last week? I believe I played it last week, where this Caucasian is at a seminar or something like this. Looked like a hotel. He's got his PowerPoint up behind him and so forth. And the bottom line is, what he was saying is that Africa must be kept poor by any means. Africa must be kept poor, because the whole bottom line with of the presentation, it wasn't very long, only 6 minutes of a probably an hour or so presentation. But that little portion that I played deals with the fact that it is by intent that Africa must be made poor. Africa is rich in mineral wealth. But even at that, if we're not manufacturing anything, if we're not producing anything, it doesn't mean a damn thing. It's just like when I was in Ghana sitting at a cocoa farm, you know, realizing that all of this is going to go to Europe, to Cadbury's, to Nestle's, to Hershey's and all these things to make chocolate products. And a lot of it, and some of it rather, will come back to Africa with brothers and sisters selling it on the street. You know what I'm saying? Yes. We have to produce something, you know, and it's the same thing here. That's why here we are job seekers. We are not job givers, because we don't produce nothing. And who we seek jobs from can't stand our ass, you know? And only through government does some of these places, especially if they get government funding, they have to employ us. But if they're a private entity, they don't have to employ us. And most time they don't. So to me, the real key for us is our future, not here, but our future on the continent, with us and brothers and sisters on the continent having expelled the Chinese, gotten rid of the Europeans and the Indians, the Korean, whoever else, to manage the land and the resources that we all could benefit from. Get rid of the neocolonialists. Get rid of those despot Negroes. Get rid of all those folks who had collaborated with Europeans to put us in this consistent situation, and control our land and control the wealth of the land and production, and begin to produce.
It scares me how much the world plays African nations against one another, in the fact that the amount of communication between African leaders. I want to say that it doesn't feel good about, you know, the Chinese. I mean, the Chinese is always that's the recent thing. I mean, I'm reading what's going on. I know what's going on. Like, you know, it's the loans, and, you know, you get debt trap. I mean, I'm going to give you, I can't catch up. I'm in debt to you. I'm obligated.
And then what happens? Look what happened to Zambia. They lost their airport. The airport is controlled by the Chinese. And now there's a couple of places where the Chinese have put in a security force. That's right. Have armed people in there to protect and to protect the things that they're now that they have built that are theirs. You know, in Ghana, I took a plane, me and my brother.
The frustrating thing is that at what point then could they not get expelled? At what point was there like, we don't have enough people, I need to get the next country over to like, come on, I need this problem. This is where it's like, that. This is where I cannot fault, but I critique, and it's like, what happened? What, we can't have this happen again, right? We can't have a situation where another country has this happen, and one country becomes two, becomes four, becomes eight, becomes 16. You see where I'm getting at?
Well, see, what happened is this. What happened is this. When Kwame Nkrumah understood in 1957, when he was the first country to break from European rule, so to speak, from the Caucasian's clutches, he told the nations, not just Ghana, he told African nations that we must unite. That we, it's not about Ghana or Togo or Cameroon or South Africa. No, it's about Africa, period, uniting as a united African states. That is the only salvation for African people. We just can't do it individually. It must be a collective effort. And then we must be able to educate ourselves to prepare to build the infrastructure on the continent that is so dire and so necessary and so needed at this very moment. You know, so this is what he was saying. But of course, it's easy for the brothers and sisters whose minds are not strong to be manipulated and thrown some trinkets at, and they will do their bidding of Caucasians to the detriment of the people and the land and their families and their ancestors, you know. And so a coup happened. And then, of course, there's other ones. Thomas Sankara, he was killed. Brother from Burkina Faso. But others, Patrice Lumumba. In fact, I think his death happened happening just not too long ago. Patrice Lumumba. I mean, and man, the mineral wealth of the Congo is still at this very moment, brother Sean, tremendous, tremendous. The amount of mineral wealth that is there.
I got a question for you. Have you heard of a man named MKO Abiola of Nigeria?
No, I have not.
You need to look him up. He was another man who died. You need to look up how that man died. He was a Nigerian. He was elected in 1993 in Nigeria. And then the military annulled the election.
Okay.
They just cut it off and put him in prison. And he said that he was the president, and they kind of locked him up. You need to look up that.
Okay. I'll check that out. Abiola. Okay. I mean, I know some horrific things happened within Nigeria. Of course, the division between Christian and Muslims, the Biafran Wars, and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of division. And, of course, the people who sow the seeds of division and mischief, of course, is the European, the divide-and-conquer idea. Just like when they sat at a table in Berlin in 1884 and 1885 and carved up Africa like it was a damn piece of cake. You know, and giving little small country. In fact, the reason why Europe is in the financial situation that it is better, not, you know, it's tough around the world because of the pandemic. But Europe, in terms of its wealth, is because of Africa, the colonization of Africa.
Yeah. The CFA. The CFA is I mean, the French colonies give 85% of their money to France.
I know. Is that crazy?
That's
today. Isn't today that crazy?
Yeah. It's absurd to the highest.
Yeah. See, and so, you know, we as African people and looking at Dr. King's life and how he was trying to, do his best. As Dr. King was trying to do his best to bring some sanity to the people, bring some peace to the people, not understanding that we're dealing with an evil entity. There is nothing, Brother Sean and listeners, that we can do to change the mindset of Europeans. They're selfish and greedy. They are not going to share. Look what happened. Look what happened a couple of weeks ago with the Trumpsters. But that's just a symptom of white folks, period. That's not just because of Donald Trump. That's a lot of white folks, period. There's even the same white folks who voted for Joe Biden. The same mindset. You know, the thing about them in this society as it relates to us is that they don't want us to really compete. They have the range. They have the control. They'll parcel off a few here and there, give you, once again, as I said earlier, the illusion of inclusion. Because the bottom line is that they want to dominate and control. They want to be able to dictate what happened. It's theirs. They took this for their prosperity. They didn't take this for some grand human experiment of human beings getting together, coming together and sharing and so forth. It's just like when you're talking about integration of something. We've never had integration. They don't want integration. Because to integrate means that I have what I have, you have what you have, and we bring it together. And what's best of what you have, what's best of what I have, and we continue to move forward together on that. That's never happened, and it never will happen. You see? So, you know, unfortunately for Dr. King, that dream, that is a nightmare. And maybe as Dr. King was evolving, he was probably coming to a state of Pan-Africanism. You know, a belief that we as African people must come together wherever we are and use the continent as our home, because that's what it is, our home. And the Africans in the diaspora know that they truly now have a home. If they want to stay in the United States, stay in the Caribbean, stay in Central and South America, stay wherever the hell they are. But they support and understand and respect what we are going to do on the continent in terms of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us on the continent. And that's what needs to happen. You know, that's what needs to happen. You know, reading some of these quotes, you know, of Dr. King, and some of them are really beautiful, and I don't know, I'm going to give you my favorite quote of Dr. King, and that is, there is nothing more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. There is nothing more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. You know, to be ignorant, ignorant means simply you have an absence of knowledge. It is easy to impart new knowledge. Many people are ignorant of a lot of things. I say it all the time, I'm ignorant of, and I still is, ignorant of quantum physics. But if somebody would explain quantum physics to me, particularly at a very rudimentary level, I can grasp it and I'll be okay. And so I have a good idea now what that's about, you know, or any other concept. So, but, you know, ignorance, once again, is not bad in itself. But to be sincere, sincere means dedicated, heartfelt. To ignorance, to wanting to do that and be that, then yes, that's dangerous. To be so sincere, to wanting to be ignorant. Then he says, in conscientious stupidity. Now, I mean, stupidity is that's the bottom line in itself. Being stupid. You don't want to know. You don't care to know. You want to stay like that. You know, you don't want to challenge yourselves to think in another fashion or think in another way. Sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. Conscientious, that you are aware and you know that your ass is stupid. The bottom line for us is that quote is so deep, because that really is a lot of times where we are. It's where we are. If anybody who's on, I see a number of people on. If you just hit star twice, if you want to join the conversation, hit star twice. Oh, a few people just got off. Okay. But, you know, there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. And consciousness
put your phone on. I'll turn the thing off.
919, were you Did you want to be on the program? No. Okay. If you anybody who is on, hit star twice and you can join the conversation. That you know that we condition shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions that we are in are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness, and consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who we are culturally and historically. And so if we understood that we have to raise our consciousness, raise our level of understanding, and we ultimately will change the conduct towards each other, which will change the conditions that we are in, you know? But that's not going to happen until we change our minds. It is a battle for the minds of our people. We are at war, and we have been warred upon. It is about the mind. Many people, just like Brother Sean mentioned it, when Sister Kara Poole, the great griot, presented earlier about Dr. King, and you can go on to YouTube and you can pull that one particular one up, this one on Malcolm. She got a lot of them. They're really good. But anyway, you know that there's information that you may not know of. And there's some situations that you had no understanding of how this happened to Dr. King and why this happened to Dr. King. You know, it was always that perception that he was, you know, trying to, you know, move the country forward in a direct, you know, simplest base, that he was just trying to move the country forward and integrate. And we don't want that, so we're going to kill him. No, it was deeper than that. It was deeper than that. As he stated, you know, when I was trying to integrate lunch counters, that was no direct economic hit on the society. But when I talked about the Vietnam War, when I talked about the deep abject poverty, you know, then it became an issue. He was like he said that the three things, you know, that affect this country: war, poverty, and what was the other one? Oh, I'll come up with it. But anyway, because of that, that's why he was killed. That's why he was killed by this government. And also, too, the government understood that they could neutralize the other organizations. They could infiltrate the other organizations. There's plenty of individuals who would be willing, you giving them the money to be an informant or agent provocateur. Man, I was watching this program many years ago, back in the 60s, maybe the early 70s, on the infiltration of the Black Panther Party. And the sister was willing to be on. She was fine. She's a very attractive sister. And she talked about how she got in and had this information, that information to provide to the government. You know, the reality is we live in a society that promotes individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. Individualism, what's in it for me? How can I get over? How can I get mine? I don't give a damn about, shoot, I'm getting mine. I want the cars. I want the clothes. I want to live over in this neighborhood. Oh, you do? Well, come here. You need to do this, this, and this. You know? Okay. And many have done it. Just like the brother, whatever, who was an informant, who was part of Malcolm's group when he was killed February 21st, 1965, at the Audubon Ballroom. He was an informant. And I remember last year, February, the documentary that it was on Netflix, Who Shot Malcolm X? And me and my friend, Brother Muhammad Abdullah, we had a discussion around it and talked about it. And the fact that cat who did it, who actually did it, who was a member of the Newark Mosque. And they knew who it was. And when the brother who is doing the investigating, who's talking within the documentary, was going to make that move, he died. But he told the brothers at the Newark Mosque how you cats had shielded him. You know, the other two dudes who didn't do it, who were not even involved, who spent a long time in prison until they were released. We live in an evil, once again, brothers and sisters, this is an evil society that cannot be reformed, and particularly by us. Particularly by us. They are in the position that they are in, and they're not going to give it up. It is theirs, not ours. And the best that you can do as you go through this madness is the best that you can do. Maybe you have a good attorney if you come up with some legal issues or challenges, a good brother or sister, or, you know, I know, go get you a European Jew. Go get the European Jew, you know. Wouldn't it be beautiful, brothers and sisters, that everything that we do with each other and for each other. Everything we do, we seek out financial advisors, attorneys, businesses, corporations, and so forth that are ours, that we developed, that are ours. Yeah. But see, and you're trained not to. That's what I'm saying. With Dr. King, had he started to talk about, we must educate. Damn the European. Damn his curriculum. Damn his schools. We must educate our young people. We must educate to establish a foundation of our people, because it's easier to educate young people than to try to change the minds of people who have already have lived some time and who are just solid in that thinking. So if we get them young and we give them the history and the knowledge and let them understand that before anybody did any damn thing, you did it. People came and sat at your feet. They came from far and wide to sit at your feet to learn math and science and architecture and music and writing and law and religion, you name it. We taught Europeans twice when they came to Kemet, the Greeks, and then they came back as conquerors. Then they fell, and then Romans came in, and then they fell. And then the Arabs swept through all out North Africa with the advent of Islam. And of course, they had no knowledge or any respect towards what we had done in Kemet. That's why they took the limestone coverings off the pyramids and built mosques and businesses or whatever. That's why you see them look the way they look today and defaced a lot of the temples and tombs already in ruin. Then the Moors, the African men who and women who are part of the religion of Islam, moving into the Iberian Peninsula, the western part of Asia, which is Spain and Portugal today. For 700 years they were there while Europe was in a dark age, and we taught them again. We showed them how to get them damn animals out their damn castles and put them in a corral. But mathematics and other things, irrigation, we taught them again. And of course, They had their awakening. They expelled the Moors. They expelled the Sephardic Jews, kicked them out. Don Quixote. You know? My point is the kind of people that we are. We're loving, giving people. It's part of our evolutionary development. They are selfish, greedy, murderous, because that's part of their evolutionary development because of environment. Don't waste your time. The energy and time that we need is to educate ourselves, educate our children, particularly. Help them understand that this is who they are and this is what they can do when you come together as African people and have the respect towards one another. Young men respecting women and elders with understanding and a reverence for ancestors. Young women respecting their men and supporting them and rearing children. We have to do this. It is not going to happen because we want it to happen. It's not going to happen because we hope it happens. It's not going to happen because we wish for it to happen. It's not going to happen because we pray for it to happen. It happens because we make it happen. We make it happen. And it happens with you, where you are, with you being an example, living a life that exemplary, not contradictory, being a man of your word, a woman of your word, loving who we are as a people, understanding as bad as it is, I still love you as an African. You may not want to be an African, but that's what you is. So on this King Day, I know here in the ATL, I know on TV, the basketball games, they always have King Day all day long, just like Christmas. All day long. There's always a game in Memphis. There's always a game here in Atlanta. You know, here is his home, and of course in Memphis is where he was assassinated. So they always have a game, and of course they'll have a game this evening, you know. So, but it would be good to, on a King Day, just any damn day, doesn't necessarily be a King Day, any day for us to come together and to release the vice grip that these Caucasians have on our minds. If you understand that tool, once you set the vice grip, you just can't pull it apart. There's a knob at the end of the handle of the vice grip that you turn. Turning that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. The more knowledge of self you have and belief in yourself, now you're able to release the tension on the vice grip, open it up, and now you see the European for who and what they are, and you don't challenge them. That's futile. That's ridiculous. Damn them. The greatest fear of Caucasians is our unity. The greatest fear of this damn planet. Just like, what was that? I can't remember who did it. Fear of a Black Planet. You know? Oh, that's Chuck D, ain't it? Fear of a Black Planet? I don't know. But that is a fear. And now when you see other groups making their move, particularly on the continent, the Chinese particularly. Like I said, I was in Ghana. I took a plane up to the northern region of Ghana, me and my friend, to Tamale, to go to the game preserve at Monley Park. When I went there back in the 90s, it was a dirt road. And it was treacherous. The Chinese came in and built a road from Tamale to Moli Park. The only bump that you get is when you go into some villages to slow yourself down. But they also, check this out. They also built a resort. They built a resort higher up than the one that is there in Moli Park. Yeah, higher up. You could look and see, and you could see the road that goes up that way. Just like they had the China Mall that was being developed when I was there, off an interstate, a highway that they had built. You know. Now, I understand the Chinese doing a lot more things than the European. The European didn't give a damn. He just wanted the resources. And when it was over, he tore stuff up, just like the French. If they had to leave, they were just going to tear it up. You know, and so they really didn't build infrastructure. They built a railroad to get the stuff from the interior to move it to the coast, to put it on ships to move it up to Europe. But they didn't, you know, build sewage systems, water systems, energy systems. Like I'm saying, there's so much that is Africa needs, and it needs us. It needs us. We need them, our brothers and sisters there. I ain't talking about going to Africa like we went to Liberia. That's just foolish. That's crazy. That was ugly. Because we went there, some of us with the mindset that we are better because we were born here and we got some white in us. We are better than them. And then their attitude was, we weren't enslaved. We better than y'all. And in fact, this is ours. No, erase all that madness from our minds. And the only thing that is in our minds is that we are African people. We're light, bright, and damn near white to blue black. And we're a one. It is a mindset. It is a spirit. So, on a king day, it would be deep if he said, you know what? We ain't going to push this. We want love. Because you son of a bitches ain't going to ever going to love us and respect us and have us share in this stuff that you stole. Never. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening now. And the hell of show ain't going to happen. So on this king day, embrace ourselves. Embrace who we are as African people. Go into our communities and share knowledge about who we are. Have us change the way we think about ourselves. You know, we could in this country. I can't say that we could have the things that we had coming out of captivity when, you know, we had Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was destroyed in 1929. And a few years later, Rosewood, which was destroyed. Elaine, Arkansas. Allentown in California. The contemporary ones, the Haight-Ai community in Raleigh-Durham. Because there is no place, there, brothers and sisters, I know that we got the village down in North Carolina. You know, the Utundi village. But there is no place of sovereignty. There is no place of independence for us as African people in this country, on this land, that we could just say it is ours. You can't do that in America. Hell, Caucasians can't do that. When Caucasians tried to do that, the government moved on them up in the Northwest. And they have what is that when they say that we have a right to take this land, or to move you, to get you out of the land that you're on, you know, eminent domain. just say, we have eminent domain and we want to take you. We're going to get you off of here. You know, look what they did to and consistently have done to the indigenous people. A few years ago with the 4 years ago, right before Trump came in and punk ass Barack. The indigenous people, when the pipeline said they were going to come through here, the people in Bismarck said, no, you ain't. You're not going to come through here. Well, okay then. We'll just go ahead and come through the indigenous people's land. You know, we ain't going to say nothing. We ain't going to ask them. We ain't asking for permission. We're just going to do it. And they did. Yes, there were some demonstrations. Many of the nations came together. The indigenous nations came together to deal with it. But eventually, they did it. They put water cannon on them, rubber bullets. Water. They watched them in water cannon in November, December, and January. These some evil people. Some evil people. And then, of course, Trump was elected. And, of course, the Caucasian who was in charge of at least one of the pipelines. And, of course, yes, they did bust. And, yes, they did adversely affect the land and the water. But he said, once Trump is in, that's our guy. You know? So I know we're going to do this because he's a contributor. He has investment. Don't care. I know that was Dr. King. He cared. But he cared at the time before his death that he believed in the Christianity that all of us as human beings, you got to understand we're dealing with an evil entity, an evil entity. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because once again, as I've been saying pretty much in this program, under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. It is in our control if we control ourselves. It is ours. We could be the top people on this damn planet. The only thing preventing us from not doing that is our mind. Because we are afraid and we don't want to break from this. Brothers and sisters, with a lot of love and respect, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodiye means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, I always end with by saying we will, because it's the will. Do we have the will? I know the Caucasian don't have the will. He can give less than a rat's ass. He has no will, especially when it comes to doing right by us. But do we have the will to come together to release the vice grip that is on our mind? To begin to love one another, trust one another, work with one another, believe in one another, respect one another. Do we have it? Brothers and sisters, you enjoy this day, this Dr. King Day, MLK Day. I like that when Brother Sean said, you put he on it, you milk, just like when you pour milk into coffee, you weaken it. Used to wake you up, now it puts you to sleep. Brothers and sisters, peace. You have a blessed and wonderful day. All right.